Commissioners, I think we just need to start the audio recording. We've got 20 participants in the Zoom meeting already. The screen is set to project the speaker, so.
Okay. Well, welcome to our Board of Equalization meeting of Utah County. We have 18 items on our agenda for today, and I think we will just jump right into those items. The first is to approve minutes. The first two are to approve previous minutes.
I will go ahead and make a motion then to approve the minutes as stated in regular agenda items numbers one and two.
Second. I will make a note, just for the record, that I do not agree with some of the findings in the March 12th minutes. But making that note, we can say all in favor for approving one and two? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. I have a note that, oh wait, no, number three is to approve the cancellation of the previous meeting. Entertain a motion?
Make a motion.
I'm going to approve regular agenda item number three.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. I have a note that we should strike item number four.
Motion to strike regular agenda item number four.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to strike four. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, we'll move to item number five, to approve or deny an appeal after the filing deadline.
Bert Harvey for the Clerk Otter's office. Let me just log back into the agenda real quick. It logged me out. I believe I have comments there. Apologies, I thought this was still there. Okay, number five, right?
So typically, we don't do this one, but there's exceptions that you have noted in the comments.
Yeah, they are requesting extension due to extraordinary or medical extenuating circumstances. So that would be where their basis is coming from. So it'd be up to the board, of course, to decide if the circumstances are extenuating enough. This would be our only appeal left. This would be our last appeal for the 2019 season before we move on to 2020.
The only question I'd have is if it's extraordinary circumstances. I mean, you found that the circumstances that they demonstrated you feel are extraordinary in circumstance themselves.
I would probably defer that to Anthony Lube. I know he's been reviewing these for those types of making a recommendation. I'm just stating that the application, that's their purpose in requesting this late appeal be heard. Specifically, they're stating that the manager owner was diagnosed with cancer and obviously had a medical situation that prevented them from filing the appeal at the time. Although I will probably let Anthony comment on as far as like what the law states and that kind of stuff if he's able, but typically the law does usually look to see if there's other people that could have filed the appeal in their place. So, but as far as like their circumstance, that is their circumstance that they're requesting for the extension of this of the appeal deadline in this particular case.
Is Anthony on the line?
This is Anthony Lube. Yep, this is Anthony Lube with the County Attorney's Office. And thanks for that summary, Bert. So for something like this, it does boil down to kind of a weighing of facts. And so if there's somebody here that can speak to this item, from that entity and kind of help explain. Because to me, the concern would be, you know, why couldn't they have filed it through somebody else, right? I mean, if there's a good reason for it that the board finds compelling, then that's something that the board can rely on. But right now, that wasn't clear from the application.
I don't believe, typically, just for a reminder of the record, this is again, Bert Harvey with the clerk auditor's office. We don't typically invite the folks who file petitions to the meeting. That's been our, because it's been unnecessary, the petition is supposed to be their reason for asking for that review. So although if the board wanted to ask this petitioner to come and present evidence or testimony at a future BOE meeting, which at this point would be likely June, we certainly can entertain that and do that if that's what the board feeling is.
You know, generally, I mean, I generally want to, you know, accept it and move forward with it, and especially given, you know, some of the circumstances I read here. But it is really hard to, I mean, because people can be diagnosed with cancer for, you know, a long time. And yes. I just don't know, there's not enough circumstances here to set any precedence with it or not, or make a real determination from it. I mean, I see here he says since that this has happened, you know, he's had his leg amputated and so forth. I mean, those are tragic things, and I think that we need to be very sensitive to it, but there's just not enough detail.
Right.
I mean, I could move forward with the detail that's in there, you know, given that it's, you know, they still have to go through the property valuation. So I don't disagree. I think Commissioner Lee points out it would be helpful if there was additional detail. But I would be prepared to move forward with a motion on 5 and 6 based on the hardship stated by the property owners.
Okay. Bill, did you have any additional questions on 6?
No, I just think maybe just for instruction, and I'm okay moving forward with it. That'd be fine to do that. Maybe just when we have these in the future, and it sounds like these are the last ones for the year anyway. So
this
would be kind of a next year thing.
Yeah.
When an application comes in, I think it'd be appropriate for us to say it's really hard for the board to, you know, we could swing one way or the other depending on a few words in there. It'd be a lot more, it's easier for us to have more detail.
And I noticed that Peter Jepson from the assessor's office is in the meeting. I don't know if he has any, if you'd like to have any comments towards.
Actually, if you can hear me, I do have a comment. I would appreciate if they could table this and let the petitioner show the date and the circumstances and that there were no other owners that were capable of doing this. I've had one almost exactly like this with the State Tax Commission. And they actually requested to see the exact dates and stuff. I'm in full favor of giving whatever benefit we can, but the law does say that if no other owner is available and capable, and they could address those things, and if it could be petitioned or if it could be postponed, and they could address those things, then we'd have the equity that we've had in the past. So that would be my only comment: is that they really need to say the date that things occurred and. And what were the circumstances why other owners or someone else couldn't have filed the appeal?
What would the effect of that be, though, Bert, procedurally?
Procedurally, if it was just simply tabled or continued to the next meeting, the taxes basically and the valuation that already stand for 2019, I'm sure the taxes on this property really already been paid. Any adjustment that would happen from evaluation appeal would be a refund type situation, and likely this appeal, even if it was approved today, would not be settled until probably early June I mean, or probably July. I mean, it'll just take more time.
But there's not like a hard deadline that this is the last
The last hard deadline has already passed, which is March 31st, which is the deadline that they have to file a late appeal by. But if something's still in process, then there's no hard deadline from the county standpoint that it has to be done by, say, September or anything else like that. The deadline is based on when they file, and the county basically does have a 60-day. The county is actually supposed to give an approval within 10 days of a late petition, but that is more of a guideline than a law. And I've asked the tax commission about that simply because, of course, not every county can make a decision on a late petition within 10 days, especially where a Board of Equalization meeting for us is maybe once or twice a month after our regular BOE season. So there are certainly things that the tax commission is aware of, but there are general guidelines that they'd like to see a late petition decided within 10 days, and then once an appeal has been accepted, it be cited within 60 days. So if the board were to accept the appeal today, we would work to have a decision on this appeal within 60 days so that the petitioner is not simply waiting forever for a decision. But if the board wants additional information, that certainly would be appropriate, and to delay it until our next Board of Equalization meeting.
Okay.
I'm sympathetic. I mean, there might be another property owner that's not going through the same, but if they're of the same family, husband and wife, they're going through the same thing. So right. I'm sympathetic to that as well. It's not that, you may have a husband or wife that is available because they don't have cancer, but in essence, they have cancer along with their spouse. And so I'm sympathetic to that part too. I just don't have enough information here to know what's available.
And we don't know what kind of, this is obviously a commercial appeal. We don't know what kind of business structure they have. I mean, is this a one-man band type operation, or is this a partnership of multiple partners? And this was just the guy who was their main.
Exactly.
We don't know the full circumstances here. And for the board's own information, we are, for the next BOE season, the late petition will be much more thorough. Our applications in the past have been more formatted to be able to go out in a letter, taking the fact mailing. That type of problem is going away this year and was went away last year. So we're going to try and make our late petitions much more comprehensive, so that these type of questions that the board's had in the past, we can maybe hopefully answer through the petition process.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion on 5 and 6.
I'd like to submit a motion to continue both 5 and 6 for more information until the next BOE meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to continue 5 and 6 to the next meeting. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. Number 7. We have 7, 8, and 9, which is to approve a large packet of categories, including charitable organizations, educational institutions, religious organizations. So I don't know if people have comments, if staff does, or if we, I know that we've reviewed those, or if we want to have a motion. I guess I'll just pause. Is there any staff comment on these?
Having reviewed them, Tanner, I would be comfortable myself just handling them together.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I did have a couple of comments from my review, if you're wanting to hear a couple thoughts.
Sure.
On Heritage Behavioral Health Systems, and Vicki, could you remind us, is that in number 7? I think it's in number 7. In the past, the board has found that they do rent out their stage a little bit, and my recollection is that the BOE has in previous years found this to be a de minimis, non-exclusive use, and you've approved their application in the past. But I was going to bring that up.
Well, Paul, on that, has anything changed from that? Is that still the same?
No, from my memory, it's consistent with their previous year's applications.
Okay.
The Masonic Lodge, and I don't remember if that's in which packet that was in, but they do a similar thing, and they rent out their building for weddings and some parties. I think that might kind of be a similar thing as the Heritage Behavioral Health Systems, but that would be something for you to possibly to look at to see if you wanted to find that that was a de minimis non-exclusive use.
I mean, have we looked at that and found that to be this consistent with years prior?
I don't recall ever having that discussion before.
Oh.
Go ahead, Vicki.
We have talked about the Heritage Behavioral one before, and it was found to be de minimis. We have not talked about the Masonic Lodge, their park, the Alcala one. They do rent it out occasionally, and all the funds do go back to the transportation of people to the Shriner hospitals.
Okay.
Okay, so that one's...
And I do believe we've got Justin Anderson here from the Utah County Masonic Association. If you would like to ask him any questions about the use or the application, apparently there's also an attorney on the Zoom call. If there's any other questions,
I mean, I think it's helpful that Paul points out those distinctions so that everyone is on notice, including these applicants, that we do review that and that. Only de minimis use is allowed, and to the extent it expands, that could jeopardize at least a portion of the tax exemption. But personally, I don't have any additional questions.
So if the attorney's on the phone.
I did just have one more item.
Okay.
And that's BYU. BYU is a nonprofit educational organization. And in their documents, they point out that they have the Wells Fargo Bank in one of their buildings, and that's a taxable use, and they've already separated that out. And they have ATMs, and I believe they've separated that out, and they pay tax on that use. But a third area is they have some cell towers, on the property. I don't think we've ever discussed the cell towers in BOE. And I don't know, they might be new also. It might be a new use this year. I don't think they separated that out though. Vicki, did they separate that out as a taxable portion of their property where the cell towers are?
No, they did not. They only did the bank part when I called them on it.
Yeah, so they separate out their bank use, and they pay tax on that, which is appropriate. The cell towers kind of made me think, because there's a building in Provo called the Mormon
Mexican Museum.
Yeah, the Mexican Museum of Mormon History or something like that. And they put cell towers on their building. And we separated that out, and they paid tax on that use. So I didn't know how the board wanted to handle the cell towers at BYU.
So being consistent with the others that have done that, is there a way that we can pass this with that carve out? Or would they have to go through on their application?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, I was going to see if Vicki could do that. Maybe like you approve it subject to exempting out the portion of the cell phone tower use, possibly.
In the past, we've had Peter look at that for the Mormon Museum. So we would need help from Peter to figure this out, how much that would be.
So I want to be careful. I don't know if they've responded either way. I'm sure that there's multiple sides of this argument, but might it be the case that, you know, a small museum, for example, that's putting a cell tower is clearly doing it just for those lease rights and that cash flow because they don't need a cell tower, whereas an entire campus with thousands of people, a cell tower on their campus might actually be part of their core operations?
Their application shows that they receive no rents, royalties, or income from the cell towers.
Oh.
Okay, well, that,
Commissioner Raines,
that's
different. You could be right that it is part of the educational use, too.
Yeah, because typically you put a cell tower on
there for... The leases specify that the tenants pay for all equipment, installation, and their portion of the utilities, so the university has a net zero income, thus retaining our nonprofit status. Mm-hmm. Any benefit to BYU is educational in nature to the students.
Okay. We've actually abated prior taxes on that basis for BYU.
Oh, okay.
Jim Stevens from the assessor's office.
Okay, thank you.
Perhaps that is just part of their educational use of the property.
Okay, I would entertain a motion on 7, 8, and 9.
I move that we approve 7, 8, and 9 on our regular agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve 7, 8, and 9. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. That passes 3-0. We move to item 10. The comments from... Go ahead, Vicki.
This is a Rosa Education Foundation. We sent them our new application this year that asked for more information, and they sent us back the old one, and I sent them two letters requesting them to send the current form that meets state code now, and they never sent anything back. But they did send the form in. It's just not the current one.
So what's the difference between the old one and the new one? That is it that we can't act on it because we have the old form, or can we act on it even though we have the old form, or what's the process?
We pulled this one out separately because it essentially is an incomplete application. The old form asked for much less detail. In our review of the processes this year, as me and Vicki were preparing to send out the letters, we looked at revised state code, and of course, bills in process at the time, which was since, I believe, most the one that we were looking at passed. Essentially, the charitable function of this exemption really requires greater detail from each organization each year in order to help the board make a decision whether they are continuing to meet the standard for the exemption. Now, in the case of religious and educational, there's not a lot more information, so the form really isn't much different from last year. But in the case of charitable organizations, there is more information that we should be reviewing. And we redesigned the form that this year to kind of ask for that information so the board can have a much more well-rounded picture of the charitable organization's functions and how they're meeting the charitable need of the community. The form from last year doesn't have that same information, and it's problematic in the case of the Rose Educational Foundation because they are applying for their exemption under a charitable function, not necessarily an educational function. So in that case, the form from last year does not provide the level of detail or extra information that we were asking for this year to ensure they meet the charitable guidelines. So they did turn in a form. It is a correct form from prior year, but we would consider it an incomplete application because they didn't turn in the additional information we were looking for all charitable organizations this year.
And it looks like you did send two requests for updates on that with no response.
We did. So we didn't put it in there as a revoke because they did file on time. They did file an application. It was the wrong application. So, you know, it's obviously up to the discretion of the board whether to approve the application as it stands or we'll revoke it. I mean, at this point, we've made attempts to get more information, so you know, I think the application stands as is.
Is this a renewal, or is this a
This is a continuing statement. This is a renewal, not a new.
Okay.
And keep in mind, I'm trying to figure out what they even. I mean, they're saying there is no real property for this business.
Yeah, this is a personal property count.
Personal property.
So this would be computers, desks, you know, equipment.
And do we have any, is part of the file, I don't see it here, is there any part of the file that talks about the value here? Or what property they are?
I don't believe so. That's one of those things that we addressed in the new form this year, was to have more information like that available. So it's also possible that even if the board were to deny, were to revoke their exempt status, that they would still fall, being this is a personal property account, they would still fall under the statutory guideline to be able to be exempted that way too as well. It's just a different set of paperwork. So
yeah. Under the 15,000 or whatever.
It's 15,000. Yeah, the legislature upped that to 15,000. So I mean, it's likely they would be able to be exempt anyways. But it's of course it's they're applying for exemption one way or the other way. Sure. This does not obviously a charitable has no value limit, whereas the statutory exemption has a value limit.
Okay. I could go either way on this one. It seems like it's a small impact if it were to be granted. It also seems like they're going to have other options if they are denied for the exemption. So happy to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we deny this application as it being incomplete.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to deny item number 10 due to the incomplete application. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That passes 3-0. Item number 11.
This is a list of the organizations that either requested revocation of their tax exempt status on these properties, or one, they did move all their equipment to Ogden, and the rest are people that failed to apply.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion on number 11.
I'll move that we revoke the tax exempt status as stated in number 11.
Second.
We have a motion and a second on number 11. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Did I hear Commissioner Ivey's vote?
Aye.
That passes 3-0. Okay, item number 12.
This is a continued statement for Thanksgiving Point that I pointed out something to Anthony, and he has questions about this, something that they sent in their continued statement.
Thank you, Vicki. This is Anthony with the County Attorney's Office. In Thanksgiving Point, notice to financial statements on page 22, they made reference to creating an LLC in which at some point in time they may be able to transfer some property. That LLC does not indicate that it would be a nonprofit entity of any sort. The application for the property, we double-checked the title, and all of them are currently held or titled under the name of Thanksgiving Point, so it would qualify. The only thing is that if there were any changes and they had moved any of these property to the Thanksgiving Point LLCs that were created, we just need to have something on the record to just state whether or not that has occurred, or if everything is still held by Thanksgiving Point. If everything is still held by Thanksgiving Point and the recorder's office is not waiting to record anything, transferring it to the LLC, then I think there's no problem with approving their applications. If there's any that are no longer held by a nonprofit entity, then those specific property parcels would have to be denied.
So you have not received confirmation on that then, is what I'm hearing? Or you have?
Correct. Correct.
Sure.
I have not heard confirmation. And so if there's anybody who from Thanksgiving Point that is here, if they could speak on that, that would be helpful just to kind of clear it up.
I don't see Mr. Ash in the list of names from Thanksgiving Point.
This is Bert Harvey. I did see Mr. Ash had registered for the meeting, but I have not seen him join the meeting yet. So I don't know if he's attempting. I know he had a little trouble last time with the audio. So.
And I think we, correct me if I'm wrong, Vicki and Bert, but I think we provided him notice of the concern and that we were going to ask this question to him at this meeting.
To my knowledge, yes.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like to me we need to continue it till the next meeting then to get that clarification.
No, I would agree.
The problem is we have a statutory deadline, and so this is the last possible date to do that decision. So, I mean, we could maybe table it for a little bit and see if he joins before the end of the meeting, give him a chance to connect. But unfortunately, this is the deadline.
I don't mind doing that. Who's going to reach out to him and try to get him on board or get him online?
Commissioners, let me see if I've got a phone number for him and I can try and contact him while we're waiting.
Well, I'm ready then for a motion to table if
Okay. That's
appropriate.
Yep.
Trying to get back to my numbers here. What number is this?
It's
one?
12.
12. I'll make a motion that we table number 12 for further discussion. We'll just table it.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to table, temporarily table item number 12. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. Okay, item 13.
Item number 13 is the annual statement for rural housing development that was continued previously. And 14 is a new application for land that they acquired last year and one parcel that they had been previously denied. I'm going to turn this over to Anthony because he's had a lot of contact with them about this.
Good.
Yes, thank you. Brad Bishop and I have had some conversations. He's also on the line, so if we have any questions for him, he'll be able to answer them. In regards to the continued use applications, so as a bit of a history, Rural Housing Authority will purchase the property and do some development, but for the most part, it's sold then to low and moderate income homes that qualify either through federal grant funds and stuff like that. To be able to take it to the next step and actually put a home on it and develop it. And so it's not always clear when that property is put into use. So in the past, we challenged their use because they had put in, I think, some sidewalks, some things that didn't require a permit. And went to the State Tax Commission, and they relied on the fact that in the operating documents for Rural Housing Authority, that they were only allowed to sell the property to low-income needs individuals. And so they were restricted by that. Well, what happened within the last year was that some lots that they had transferred to a different for-profit entity in exchange for other property that was closer to the other lots that they had. But in doing so, they took land that had been set aside for low income and then transferred it to a for-profit entity in exchange. And so that raised some concerns for Vicki and for our county attorney's office, because we were worried that they had relied on the fact that they couldn't transfer it any other way unless it was to a low income. And so by doing this for a for-profit entity, that kind of shows that they're able to do it in other ways. Now, Mr. Bishop and I had conversations about that. He showed me that the property that they had acquired has already been allocated to low-income families. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but I think all but one have already been sold to low-income families. Does that sound right?
That is correct. And one will be sold here in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, great. So as far as like the new applications go, any concerns that I had regarding those have been resolved. So I don't have any reservations if the board wants to approve the new applications. He also submitted confirmation documents showing that these have been sold and gone through the process. For the continued use application, there were two properties that we had concerns about. One was purchased back in 2017. That is parcel number 30:002:0089. And then a neighboring lot that was purchased in 2018, 30:002:0061. And with those, it didn't look like anything had been done on the land to put it into use. It's been years. And so they've been getting this tax treatment, and we were thinking, well, that's not really fair if they're not using it. There's no development going on it, and it's going on. And we scrutinize these greatly. And so for other developers who are in similar situations and they're paying their taxes, it didn't seem fair. But after talking with Mr. Bishop on the phone a few different times, and then yesterday he sent me documents, it looks like they had sewer improvements done on the land. And that the reason for the delay in selling these parcels has just been working with adjoining lots as they've been trying to get the sewer line extended to the main line. So since there has been efforts, there actually been acts to put this property into use to get it to the point where they can sell it. My concerns on these are resolved, but I wanted to bring that to the board's attention in case the board has any additional questions for Mr. Bishop.
Commissioner, let me bring up maybe just one other issue. On agenda item number 14 for the new applications, we have parcel 304770. And I believe that parcel came before the board last fall as a new property application. If my memory serves, there was no representative from rural housing at that meeting.
That's correct.
Yeah, so we pulled that parcel up, and that parcel appeared to just be sitting vacant, and the BOE denied that application at that time. I believe that rural housing has appealed that application. The other parcels on that agenda item kind of clearly show, you know, sidewalk, curbing, gutter, development going on. But that parcel that I mentioned appeared to be vacant. I don't know if we want to talk to Mr. Bishop about what, if any, development or construction has begun on that parcel and when it began, because that might impact the appeal that's currently pending. But anyway, that might be an issue with that single parcel on the new application that you may want to find out more information.
Would you like me to speak to that?
Yes.
This is Brad Bishop, by the way.
If you could, Brad, that'd be great.
So my name is Brad Bishop. I'm the executive director representing Rural Housing Development Corporation, also known as Self-Help Homes. And in one of the last meetings that we had, I did share the plat off the county. Bert, you may still have that. That was shared with you. I can also put it on screen if I have permission to do that. But it shows the development itself has four plats, H-I-J-N-K are the plats. H&I, all the improvements were put in. They've been actively being, have been sold to low-income families in the mutual self-help housing program. The other remaining two plats, though all the sidewalk utilities haven't been in, on site, a lot of improvements have occurred on there, which it's represented on the map, but we've installed sewer and water and pressurized in irrigation into the property. We've moved several $100,000 worth of power lines, buried them on that property that is shared by both, for all plats. There was an irrigation line constructed for the adjoining farmer across that property and buried. We've actually got a fully improved building lot on that in one of those two plats undeveloped because it was adjoining another H&I that does have fully improvements, and it just made sense to extend that one lot. So we do have one fully developed lot. And then we have utilities coming in on both sides of that parcel in question.
Brad?
Yes.
It flashed up there. So which parcel are we talking about? Because it was on the screen, then it was off the screen. Now it's back on. So which parcel are we talking about? Is it the bottom one?
If you can see the irrigation line constructed
right
in the middle of that parcel, and then on the bottom right, you can see kind of a cul-de-sac that was installed.
Right.
That is the parcel.
That's the parcel in red. That larger parcel that goes all the way, that wraps all the way around.
Correct. That's plats J and K.
Yeah, this one is interesting for me because normally we like to see a little bit more than this, but I was briefed on the history here that there was at one point a denial, and the state tax commission upheld the use of self-help homes, and just the very unique nature of this nonprofit organization. You know, it's almost any work that shows that it's getting ready to develop the land, to transfer it to these homeowners. Again, it's almost a different standard. It's the same standard by state law, but given that decision by the state, I'm comfortable moving forward that they're making the good faith efforts to prep this according to the terms of their nonprofit organization.
So you're talking about the denial in the sense of years ago? Or
years ago.
Years ago, not the one last fall.
Right.
No, this is Anthony with County Attorney's Office. Brad, could you talk a little bit just about the timing of some of this? You did a great job of talking about all the improvements that were made to the land, but as Paul was mentioning, that timing too is a big factor because it could impact our appeal too at the State Tax Commission. I mean, if these things were happening and we just didn't have it before, then that might help us in our decision of recommendations of what to do with that appeal.
Yeah, you bet. So all this occurred early last year when they were, the first lots sold to families were actually in March of last year. All those improvements I previously described on the large parcel in question were all in at that time. And I do apologize. We initially submitted had the wrong prefix on this parcel when we submitted it in February, and then in, when you guys did have the hearing in the fall, it was like a day or two before Thanksgiving, and my plans changed, and I could not make it. So that's what happened. But all the improvements were there as of application of February of 2019.
So the irrigation line was constructed last year. The overhead power removal was done last year.
Correct. In fact, the development agreement with Salem City require those items before we can do any improvements on the H&I plats with all the developed lots on it.
Okay.
So is there action that can be taken right now? Obviously, there's 13 and 14, but is there action that can be taken at this meeting that would potentially remedy the item that is currently up for appeal?
No, I don't think so, but the information is certainly helpful as far as timing and what's been done on the property, and that can kind of assist us as we handle the appeal.
Okay.
But you can't do anything about the appeal right now.
I'd entertain a motion on 13 and 14.
I'll make a motion that we approve items 13 and 14.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to approve 13 and 14. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0.
Thank you.
15. I didn't see any questions on this. Go ahead, Vicki.
This is a new application for Habitat for Humanity. An uncle of one of their participants donated some property that will be torn down so they can build a new house for her. And so Anthony was going to talk about the house.
Thank you, Vicki. So the question here then is what actions has Habitat for Humanity done to prepare this lot and putting it into use for the intended purpose? We know that it's going to be used for it. We just need to know if they started trying to tear down the house, some sort of action has taken place to put it into that use.
I think this is a similar situation as self-help homes that, you know, Habitat for Humanity usually just develops property for low-income families. And the question here is if they've done something with this property or if they're just holding on to it.
Well, this property was donated to them in 2019, correct? That's how I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And so I think that the question on, you know, from January 1st, has there been anything done necessarily to the property? I'm not sure what the answer is on that, but there is action that it was taken in the way of transferring or accepting the property for their purposes of what they do for business or their business model. So unless there's a question in the sense of, have they done anything, pulled permits? I don't know when, did they do the demolition already? I don't know what's been done since that time unless there's something different in there.
And those are all the relevant questions. Vicki, do we know who would be appearing on behalf of Habitat for Humanity?
It would be Alan Hill.
Okay, I do not.
I don't see his name on there anywhere.
Right. Just as a notice, I did notice Alan Ash did pop in. So, at some point, if the commission wants to pull back that agenda item, he looks like he is available to talk to that. But I know our office did send out notice to Habitat for Humanity, and I'm fairly positive we gave him notice too of what our concern was. Correct, Vicki?
I, having been ill so much since the last meeting, I'm not sure what, Bert, have you talked to him?
I do not recall having had a conversation with anyone from Habitat Humanity myself. So I don't know if our concerns have been communicated to them directly. I have not talked to them personally that I can recall off the top of my head.
And again, I think you do need to make a decision on this today, so you might just have to make your best judgment based on the information you have.
I mean, Bert, if you want to try calling again, calling this person too, getting somebody on the phone,
I can table it. I mean, if that's what the board would like to do, then I would be happy to make that attempt.
I mean, I'm actually comfortable that the fact that this is their business model, they have a long history of doing this. And if the property really is in the disrepair as stated in the application, it's hard to imagine them doing anything other than what they say they're going to do here. So I would be comfortable approving it.
And I feel the same way. I think it's within their standard, you know, it's how they operate. So
they usually don't sit on properties for long periods of time. I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we approve the application.
Commissioner Lee, did you have any other thoughts on it? Or?
Oh, I was going to make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we approve the application, the new application, as stated number 15 on our regular agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve item 15. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That passes 3-0. I'm happy to move. Entertain a motion to untable an item.
Oh, are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll make a motion to untable the, what's the number?
12.
Number 12. Bring it back to the commission. Okay.
We have a motion and a second to take 12 from the table. All in favor say aye.
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 It passes 3-0. Now we're back to item number 12. I believe I'll turn this. We had the briefing from staff. I believe that Anthony had some questions for Mr. Ash. I'll let you, Anthony, kind of lead some of this discussion.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Ainge. Mr. Ash, in the application for Thanksgiving Point, it indicates that Thanksgiving Point created an LLC in which they can transfer property to that LLC. At the type of that we've looked, all the property that is being that the applications are regarding are still listed as registered under Thanksgiving Point, but because of the delay sometimes of changing of ownership, and since Thanksgiving Point could transfer it, we just wanted to make sure we had somebody to put on the record that that property is still held and that property has not been transferred of the LLC.
Yeah. So you're aware of that agreement, right? Did you read in our that was in our audited financial statements, right?
That's where you're right. And that was on page 22.
Yeah. Basically, there's an LLC formed between Thanksgiving Point Institute, Greer Company, and Slope Residential to do a high density residential development. We would be part of that, but the land has not been transferred over yet. The Ashtons own that in one of their companies, so they would have to transfer that land to the Institute in order for us to put that in. Where it's all tied up in right now with Lehigh City, and we haven't been able to make much progress with Lehigh City. They've got a hold on development right now in the kind of our resort area that we have here. And so we're just delayed. And so even though that's on that audit, nothing's really happened.
Okay.
But we had the agreement reviewed by an attorney, a nonprofit attorney with Honky. And it looks like, you know, we're able to do that still within our nonprofit.
Excellent, perfect. So all the property then on the application for continued use still owned by Thanksgiving Point. So I guess that's...
The different parcels are owned by different companies, but we have to pay it. In our agreement, overall agreement, we have to pay those, the Institute, we have to pay all of those property parcels. So they don't pay them, we do, because it's part of the our agreement with them. It's an internal agreement.
Okay. Then I have no further questions.
Okay.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Okay, I've entertained a motion on number 12.
I'll make a motion that we approve the statement for continuing property tax exemption as stated number 12 on our agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve item number 12. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That passes 3-0. We move to 16.
Number 16 is to approve the annual statement for charity plans and continued property exemption for IHC.
Okay.
I think there are people online for that. Anthony, do you have questions?
For IHC?
I don't think you.
I have a question. No. Why was this one held separate from the main pack?
That's actually a decision on my part. With the charity plans, we're trying to figure out how best to handle these because any medical charitable organization that has one, there is a charity fund that has to be kind of reviewed and we're not sure after our previous meeting, we weren't totally sure if the charity plan should be approved separately or together. So we're putting them together so it can all be decided in one agenda item. And because there's a separate item, we're pulling these, and this is gonna be our standard format for now in the future, that any charitable organization that is also a medical facility that requires a review of their charity plan, we're gonna put these separately so the board can make a determination on these individually.
Okay.
So this is just our new process.
Okay, thank you. And so this is the same property. They're already tax exempt. It's just the charity plan that's been approved many, many years. So I see that Mr. Gibson is on. I don't know if he would prefer to make a statement or not.
Thank you, Commissioner Strange. You can imagine we have been taxed in our current environment that's requiring us to meet this way with the whole COVID situation. But I think who need it, and regardless of their ability to pay, and we'll continue to do so moving forward. We do have, I think, a Bentley pay on us. Can you go in more detail if you need it? But really, new hospital in Spanish Fork, that's coming along great. We'll be able to serve the south end of the valley quite well. I guess we're open for any questions if you have it. I do have colleagues from both Utah Valley, Cal Hansen, and American Fork Hospital, Jason Wilson, are both online. If you have anything specific to those hospitals.
Thank you. Bert, I guess I do have a question, not necessarily about IHC, but as you were clarifying the process, that it's only the medical facilities that are required to put the charity plan forward?
That's correct. There's under state law, the charitable organizations that operate a health facility or medical facility, it's defined in law, and I'm not giving you the full rundown on that, but there are certain organizations that are required to provide additional documentation. In this case, the charity plan, where that is a completely separate thing that has to be reviewed on top of everything else that goes in that. And we've just felt that because that has its own special extra requirement, that it's just gonna be easier in process and cleaner by pulling these out and having them, heard and giving organizations like IHC a chance to detail their charitable plan before the board and make a public statement on that. So that way it's easier than having it all mashed in with everything else. That's just pretty much your standard. So we're just trying to find the best way to make sure that we're complying with the law and every standard better than we have in the past and in a much more transparent way than we have in the past.
Okay. No, I think that's a good improvement. When we are reviewing the charitable standard, does it require any medical provider to actually show that they are providing free services? Or is it sufficient to just show, at least for a portion of their population, or is it sufficient to show that overall the care that they're providing is more than they collect, even if they are charging a small amount to every single participant?
I think it's probably a better question for either Anthony or Paul, as far as like from maybe from a legal standpoint or from a standard standpoint. I believe the general thing we're looking at is, you know, when a charitable organization is applying for exemption, and generally the standard is looking to see that the benefit they're giving to the community is greater than the property tax exemption that they would be getting. So if an organization like IC, which is a very large medical organization, gets a property tax, would pay, say, $3 million in property taxes, if they can show through their charitable plan that they are giving back to the community at least $3 million in benefit, that would be a factor in a county's decision to grant that exemption. But that's probably more closer to a legal understanding of the standard, and that's just kind of my opinion and kind of our rule of thumb we use in the office and when we're trying to process and get as much information for the board as possible.
And I'm going to jump in there too. There's a second part, especially with IHC, besides their charitable contribution that comes, you know, in a dollar figure, you know, to the county and to the residents there, the offset. They also are partners with us as a county, and they offset something that we'll see especially highlighted when we're talking about this coronavirus. Many counties across the United States have a hospital, a county hospital, in which the county is running the hospital. We don't have that. IHC is one of our partners in that, which allows us, even under state law, not to have a hospital that we run. And so there's an offset there, not just to the citizens, but also, I mean, it's both ways, to the citizens, the government, and to the citizens, because if you look across the country right now and you see the hospitals going on with this COVID-19 and just kind of the messes that are in there, the counties are really struggling. Those that have hospitals, like IHC is, I'm sure, feeling some of those burdens, we would be seeing them on a governmental level as well, which we're not, because we have a partner that is shouldering some of that. So there's a benefit there, quite a benefit.
Nathan or sorry, Anthony or Paul, any additional context on whether it's does the provision of free services actually matter, or is it just the totality of the value relative to what's collected?
Yeah, free services is really not an element. What you're looking at is that the medical facility provides a gift to the community greater than the amount of property taxes they would otherwise pay. So Bert did a good job of explaining that. You could charge a fee to every individual, but you would need to show that it's a reduced fee or that you're willing to reduce those fees for low-income people, and that you indeed have reduced fees to the extent that you've provided that you provided a gift to the community. So it could be reduced or free to some but not others, or that's not really something that you would look at, just that that they have charged overall lower fees greater than the amount of the property tax would otherwise be.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner?
Yes.
This is Vicki. The standards that the medical organizations have to meet, standard number 3 talks about that, and I'll read it, it's under number C, letter C. It says that indigent persons who, in the judgment of the admitting physician, require the service generally available at the hospital or nursing home, receive those services for no charge or for a reduced charge in accordance with their ability to pay. And so they meet that in their charity plan and where they talk about standard number 3.
Okay.
Yes. One point to emphasize, and I think Mr. Gibson pointed this out, is that they agree to provide medical services without regard to ability to pay. That's a critical element in this.
Okay, thank you. And just, do we have a sense for What is the total value of the tax exemption that's being offered in this application?
Vicki, Bert, this is Bentley, counsel for Intermountain Healthcare. I'm happy to chime in on this one. It's on page 11 of our charity plan, where it talks about the total amount of taxes that we would have paid are estimated to be about $9,395,000, and the amount of charity care we provided in 2019 was $29 million, so roughly 3x.
Perfect. Thank you. And I also saw another much larger number on page 15 of the value of the gift to the community. So I just couldn't find the actual tax exemption amount. So thank you for putting that out.
This is Jason Wilson from American Fork Hospital. Is it also accurate that we did pay a little over $1 million in property taxes out of that $9 million total? Was for properties that we didn't include in that, that weren't included in that tax exemption. So I think the total exemption comes to about $8,300,000.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate all of your time. I don't have any additional questions. Is anyone else?
Nope. No, I can make a motion to approve regular agenda item number 16.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve regular agenda item number 16. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. That passes 3-0. We move to item number 17. I have reviewed this.
Commissioner, I'm going to let Anthony take this whole thing.
Go ahead, Anthony.
Thank you, Commissioner Ange and Vicki. What led to this coming back on the agenda too, and why we are changing how we do our charitable plans and our charitable applications, is that after at the last meeting, Planned Parenthood's charitable plan was up for review, and the board there was a motion to approve the application, but it failed because it was a 1-1 vote. So nothing passed that approved it, and there was no motion necessarily to deny it. There were findings of fact that were read into the record. And so afterwards, we were looking at the requirements because we still had an application for continued use by Planned Parenthood. And when we were looking through the requirements in Standard 2 of the Utah State Tax Commission, we saw references that a charitable plan was supposed to be submitted to the commission. And when the commission considered the application, they were supposed to consider the charity plan in making a decision whether or not that they met that charitable use exemption. And so it was something that really shouldn't have been broke apart. Just that's kind of how we've historically done it. But really, it's a component and a tool to help you in determining whether or not they're meeting their exemption status. And so the application itself was still outstanding and was going to be coming up on the very next agenda meeting. So we had all new items now, including this one, have the charitable plan put back on. Since this charitable plan wasn't officially approved or denied, it was just placed back on so that way the commission can kind of review it and take that in consideration with the application as a whole and determine whether or not to approve or deny their application.
Okay, thank you. I've reviewed this item. I think it's pretty clear that there is a tax exempt purpose here that's being used. I don't have any questions. I would entertain a motion to approve this. Well, I did have one question about, is there someone from Planned Parenthood on to answer?
She's right there.
Yes, I'm here. Carrie Galloway.
Hi, Carrie. I just had the question about, at the very last paragraph of your charity plan, you indicate that the organization has begun charging a fee. And
yes.
So, but the leading paragraph to that, it estimates the value of the charitable service. And so I just wanted to understand whether this charging of this fee, you feel like in 2020 will diminish the value of your charitable gift to the community?
I'm not sure exactly what the numbers will be in the end, but with a flat $10 copay, no one is denied services beyond that. They are put on a sliding fee scale, again, determined by the income coming into the family, number of people supported by it, and their additional fees are assessed according to the standard federal poverty level scale. The reason we are charging the flat $10 fee is we no longer have the National Family Planning Program. No one in Utah has the National Family Planning Program right now. And so we had to change our business model. We are still giving, my guess is, a similar charity contribution to Utah County. It is just rearranged in how it's being done.
Okay. And does anyone on the call have a sense for what the value of the tax exemption is here?
I certainly don't.
And we should have that in our records, right? Of what the assessed value is, assuming it's not exempt.
Well, I think this is Anthony talking. I know we've had some property in the past. I mean, Hurstwood was an example where for years their property hadn't been assessed. And so once they failed to file an application, it took a year for our assessor's office to be able to get somebody out there to reassess the property and value it and get it out. Having said that, it wasn't like they weren't trying. They have a busy workload. So Jim, maybe you might have a little bit of more of an understanding on something like this. Oh, he's trying to get
part of the delay for Hurstwood was the appealing of the denial of the exemption. So we kind of held off going out and getting the values until it was upheld. And of course it is now in process. It was approved for exemption, but we're waiting for some monies to be paid and the state appeal to be dropped. I can look up, I'm working from home, I'm trying to get my other computer up. I can pull up to and see what we've got on Planned Parenthood, but I don't think it's been assessed for a long time. So
I'm just trying to go through the same rough figure that we just did with IHC. They exceeded it, and now we have Planned Parenthood saying that's a $400,000 value of gift. We should know pretty quickly, I think, if it's anywhere near the value of the tax. My guess is, I'm not actually real familiar with the facility of the organization, but that would have to be a pretty high-priced building to pay $400,000 in taxes. But it'd be great to just confirm that, since that's part of the requirement here.
And I see Jim's fingers typing away on the computer, so he's anxiously engaged in trying to get those numbers. Oh, and Jim, you got muted because he had a little bit of a sound reverb. So,
Mister, I pulled it up on Auditor Land while he's looking, and from what I can see, it doesn't have any value, not since 2009.
And that's been our standard practice.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, can we get a sense for the square footage or something of this building? I mean, right? Isn't this? I mean, this is part of what we're supposed to be evaluating, right?
That's correct. Why Jim's pulling those numbers, just so you're aware, when Property is wholly exempted. The assessor's office doesn't, they stop assessing it at that point. So typically, the county doesn't have that, we don't typically have that data right in front of us because they don't assess a property that's been exempted.
True.
But I'll, you know, Jim's an expert on that, than I, more an expert on that than I am.
I mean, if we were looking for a ballpark, it might be a bit easier. We might be able to provide that with Merlin.
Clarissa, we could not understand
Clarissa,
your comment.
I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yes.
I can give you some examples of other commercial properties in the area and their values, knowing that this may be completely different than that, but it would at least give you somewhere to go.
Okay.
Okay. For parcel 117-014-0032 was at $459,700, and their taxes were $4,240.73.
Is that like a nearby property?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a retail property that's just north and west of this one.
Of somewhat similar size?
Possibly. I mean, there's not a lot there. I'm just kind of looking at aerial images and trying to find commercial properties that would be the most similar.
Well, we're if that were the case, their gift would be exceeding it by 100 times. So
that's kind of what I'm finding is I'm looking at values around it.
Okay. I mean, it could get up to 40 million or much bigger before this was even a question. So I guess that kind of helps answer that question for me. And I would entertain a motion to approve.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yeah.
This conversation is fascinating because we're talking about charity. We're talking about gifts. Yeah. Gift to the society, gift to people, gift to us as taxpayers, and offsetting. And yet I think we're also not looking at the gift of what a life would be and how valuable that would be in our community. And I'd love to hear anybody give a value of what that is. What's a life worth?
Okay.
I mean, that's going to be worth way more than I think anything that we're talking about here in the way of a charity back to us as a society. And so, with that, I think that it falls short significantly. We can go through the steps and say, you know, on some sort of a legal basis, they cross off the check boxes. But I'll remind the commission and others that there was once a time in this country in which we checked off the boxes when it came to slavery too, and there was a value there, and there was an assessment that was done. And so for me as an individual on this one here, the charity plan, we're calling it a charity plan, and it's not a charity. The charity plan is not even coming close to what we're losing in society. Now I'll recognize that the actual abortions themselves are not done in this county. They're done in Salt Lake, but they are referred from this organization to up there to be performed, and they go through the whole process in doing that. There was a question last time that, well, if this is the case, then maybe we should not be giving IHC the same status. So research was done on that. It's not even close to the same. They do medical. They do medical and medical. They don't do electives. There's no electives. We called them. We asked them. There's no electives that are going on. And so there's it's a completely different situation that's happening there. That's why I'm comfortable with IHC and what they're trying to do in that sense. But I'm not comfortable at all in what I see with what's going on here and the charity plan. If we're measuring it according to value, according to gift, and according to what's coming back, one life, not just one, but many, many lives are being disrupted here. And that's not a charity plan in my book.
Okay. Thank you for those comments. I feel like it's, personally, I feel like it's my obligation to review these by the legal standard, to apply that standard equally. I am a donor to some charities. I am a participant with some charities. I think that tax exemption is important for charitable organizations. I believe in the role of charitable organizations. And I get concerned. I would be very concerned in another environment where maybe the organizations that I care most deeply about were scrutinized at an unfair standard, something above and beyond what the legal requirements are to revoke that tax-exempt status. And so for me, I try to do a clear reading of the law and the requirements here, and I see that it is that those requirements are met.
Yep. And slavery was clear legal at that time, too. So I mean, do we have a value for life? Do you have any value for one life, or is there no value?
I think that's an unfair question. You know the answer to that. And of course, I value life. And obviously, this organization in their list provides STD screenings, cancer screenings, family planning services, et cetera. At this county. So I would actually like to end the discussion on this item and entertain a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion that we deny the application as stated in number, what's the number for it?
This is number 17.
Number 17.
Okay, I don't believe you have a second to that. I'd entertain a motion to approve it, or I'm happy to suspend the rules to make a motion to approve it.
I'll make a motion to approve with the caveat that we are acting as a quasi-judicial body, and it is our responsibility as such to apply the law equally, not to legislate. And there is a proper area to change the law. And this is not it.
And with that, I am not going to second, but I do think it takes courage to push things forward, and I will be one that will be standing for life.
You know, Bill, I think all three of us stand for life. There's no question that all three of us are fully committed to life and protecting those rights. That's why we all three voted for the resolution that we passed unanimously. That's why all three of us have been diligent and committed to protecting and expanding the rights to the unborn in the proper avenue. And so I would really appreciate it if you wouldn't turn this into a political circus when we're fulfilling our role as in our quasi-judicial theme, so that we can continue to work together on something all three of us strongly agree on.
I mean, even the state and the legislature moved in a certain direction as well, and they're moving in that direction, and I think that it takes political courage to move with them in that direction too.
Okay.
And that's why we moved there.
I'd like to end discussion on this, and I will suspend the rules so I can second Commissioner Ivey's motion. So we have a motion and a second to approve item number 17 with Commissioner Ivey's comments. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay. And with my with my comments being in the record as well.
Okay, that passes 2-1. Regular agenda item number 18.
Commissioners, this was placed on the agenda with the anticipation that the meeting next week, being that the meeting was, that these two meetings were basically scheduled back to back, just simply out of purpose that of kind of that happened, that there would be no need for the meeting next week. However, we did continue two items from this meeting that potentially we could still have a meeting next week if the board chose to. Although typically notice needs to go out to folks at least 10 days in advance. That would put us within that window. So we can still cancel the meeting and still have our regular scheduled meeting in the 1st of June.
I would push those continued items to the 1st of June.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, I'm for that too.
Okay. Then there probably would not be a cause to have a meeting next week, and therefore the cancellation was put on there as, at the board's for the board's approval at their discretion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we approve the notice of cancellation of the meeting for May 7th, 2020.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve item number 18. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm. That passes 3-0. Final motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're now adjourned. Thank you.